This episode is brought to you by DistroKid.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey everyone, today's guest is Fletcher Draghi, guitarist for Hermosa Beach, California punk rockers, Pennywise. Together we take a deep dive into the writing, recording, and inspiration behind the fan favorite song, Fuck Authority, taken from their 2001 album, Land of the Free. This song, to me, is the embodiment of what Pennywise is all about, a fast punk rock sing-along with socially conscious lyrics. Fletcher mentioned that the band doesn't demo in the traditional sense, that they prefer to get into their sweaty storage space and hammer things out together, old school style. And talk about two worlds colliding, Fletcher mentioned that the warehouse they practice in is right next door to a space used by the 80s metal band Dokken. I mentioned to Fletcher that I think Land of the Free is one of the best sounding Pennywise records, and he was quite complimentary to producer Joe Barisi for the sonics he made come to life, even though at times him and Fletcher butted heads, a story you'll have to hear him tell to believe. And for all the crazy stories that we've all heard about him over the years, I've always said that deep down, Fletcher is a gentle giant, as evidenced by how the gang vocal of this song came about, and what he did for a young fan from Canada who was going through a particularly rough patch. Pretty heartwarming stuff. For all this and a Fletcher remix of a live Dokken album, stay tuned.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast.
Well, hey, Fletcher, top of the morning to you.
Bottom of the morning to me. It's like you're on the East Coast. I'm on the West Coast. this is still early, brother.
Did I want to do it this early or did you suggest doing it this early?
I do. Because I'm usually up at like 7, 8 in the morning. But today, last night, I woke up in the middle of the night and started eating pizza at like 3 a.m. So spent a couple hours doing that shit. Now I'm groggy, but I'll get through it.
You sound like me. That's the worst. You get up like, I know I shouldn't eat right now, but I always do anyway.
Dude, I just got back from Australia, so I'm jet lagged. And it's like, I'm getting this 3 a.m. wake up call, like 3 to 5 every night. It's just like, okay, what are you going to do? Eat, you know, watch TV, eat.
How was things over there for you guys? Because, you know, it's been a while. They were one of the hardest lockdown countries. How'd the shows go?
It was good. Like, you know, we had a lot of sold out shows. It was like business as usual, man. The backstage was on lockdown, so we couldn't see all our usual suspect friends, which everybody probably liked that because it wasn't mayhem back there all night long. But we went with the Circle Jerks, so that was really cool. And the opener was this band called Civic, and they were like local Australian kids, and they kicked ass. So yeah, it was really it was entertaining, and the crowds were just fucking hungry, man. You know, Brohem, how it goes. Like, oh, God, a lot of these places now can stop it with proper security, but you can't stop it in Australia. So every night was mayhem, and it was fun. So we were stoked to get back there, and they were hungry. So here we are, jet lagged a week and a half later.
That's awesome, man. Well, you're the second person in Pennywise. We had Jim on the show probably over a year ago now. And so you're the second guy from the band. The listeners have been clamoring for a Fletcher episode. So here you are. And I got to tell you, man, I went back. I researched these episodes, as I always do, pretty thoroughly. And I'm just shocked. I went back. I cannot believe how prolific you guys were. You know, your first record, self-titled Pennywise, came out in 91, and every 2 years you had Unknown Road in 93, About Time in 95, Full Circle in 97, Straight Ahead in 99, and then Land of the Free in 2001, which features the song we're going to talk about today, Fuck Authority. Plus, you guys were touring your ass off in between all that. Like, insane.
It was a lot of work, man. It was definitely, you know, a full-time job. I mean, it still feels like a full-time job, but you know, I think a lot of bands did that. You know, NoFX was notorious for putting on an album every year. BR was like an every 2 year band, right? You guys did your fair share, but it's what you do, right? And I mean, coming up with the material, like we're talking about today, that's the hardest part. You know, you're on the road, you're writing. We were never a band that sat around on the bus together with an acoustic jamming, you know, like we're like the guys who write in their bedrooms and their garages and then get together and start hashing it out. And of course, a couple songs get written on the road, but like you see these bands that are out there with like Pro Tools rigs or, you know, at soundcheck every day practicing new songs. We were too busy partying to do that. So it was hard to like take that little time that you had off and where you want to like chill and just start crunching. But yeah, somehow we got all those albums out.
Well, no, I mean, and the song today, we're going to talk about Fuck Authority. So, you know, was this something, I'm assuming it wasn't a holdover from another record, because I mean, this sounds like it's just classic Pennywise. It could have been on any of the aforementioned records, but was it written specifically for Land of the Free?
Yes. So like I said, when it comes to songwriting time, it'll be like, hey, we're going to take 2 months off, or we're going to get a little window here in between touring, or a natural window would just be created. So we'd know, hey, we need to release another record, and we'd all start working. And the process is basically, like Jim told you, I'm sure I listened to that interview as well. It was awesome.
Thank you.
We all kind of write individually, and then we get together in the practice space, which is a garage that's been a single car garage for the last 20 plus years. I mean, we've been in garages and storage containers our whole life. We had a little time in the Dawkins studio, which he let us in there. That's a funny story.
Yeah. Jim mentioned that. I still can't believe that.
Dude, the story on that, like, are we allowed to just tell random stories?
Of course, please do.
I've told it a bunch of times, so people probably heard it, but I was always the thrifty guy, and I was always the builder of these garages and, you know, drywall and carpet. And we'd go to Carpeteria Dumpster, get the carpet, hit it with Carpet Fresh in the backyard, vacuum it, but still like full of dog urine, doggy dandruff, you know, hanging that shit on the walls, especially the ceiling. Like you're just covered in filth. You're usually like hot and shirtless and just fucking catching all this debris when you're pounding nails. So it's nasty, but, we had a storage container, and we were always like thrifty. So we had a storage container. It was like 8 foot by, I don't know, 30. And I built walls inside of it, soundproofed it, had a little storage area at the front. And literally I could stand in there and touch both the walls, like left to right, and the drums in the back. You had to like weasel your way into this tiny fucking room with no, I mean, it's probably literally by the end of it with the drywall and everything, it was like 7 feet by 20 feet. So it's just this little capsule, you know, and we're in there for a year. I think we were writing Unknown Road around that time, or no, not Unknown Road, About Time.
Okay.
Yeah, About Time. And we'd run an extension cord over to Dawkins' studio, and I'd plug it into this light socket. I got a little adapter. And like, so Dawkins over there with their like Ferraris and shit and Great White in this thing, in this little compound. And Ken Seaton, our old friend that was like there since the beginning doing our flyers and all our printing, he had a print shop. So that's why we were even on the fucking property. And we were practicing there for, you know, a year or something. And one day we're playing the Palladium, and it was those Epitaph Summer Nationals, right? And yeah. So Dawkin comes over and he sees us loading up gear, and he goes, oh, what are you doing? Band in the Box. You got a gig tonight? And I was like, oh, yeah. And he's like, oh, where are you playing? I'm like, Hollywood Palladium. He's like, what? I go, well, Hollywood Palladium. He goes, oh, no, you're not playing the Hollywood Palladium. You're confused. And I go, oh, I am? And he's all, yeah. The Hollywood Palladium is like this huge venue in L.A. You're definitely not playing the Palladium. And I go, yeah, we are. I know for sure the Hollywood Palladium, we are playing there tonight. And he's like, are you serious? He's all, do you know how big that venue is? I'm like, yeah. He's all, well, who are you opening for? You know, that's a honor to play there. And, you know, that's big time shit. And I was like, yeah, I know. I go, well, we're actually headlining. He goes, okay. He goes, dude, he goes, you're tripping. You're not fucking headlining the Palladium. All right. He goes, you need to call your manager or whoever it is that takes care of your band and find out where you're going, because you're going to the wrong spot. I'm like, no, dude, we're headlining the Palladium tonight. He's all, you're out of your fucking mind. Like, he was adamant. There's no fucking way. And I'm like, I don't know how I prove it to you. And that was like before fucking, you know, cell phones and internet basically, and smartphones. And there was a BAM magazine laying there.
Oh yeah.
Or an LA Weekly or something. And I go, wait a second. I fucking open it. There's like a full page ad, Pennywise fucking headlining Hollywood Palladium. He's like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, he was completely blown away, out of his mind. He's like, this is not happening. I'm like, yeah, we've been doing this shit forever. We sold out the Shrine like, you know, a couple of years ago. And he's like, what the fuck? So he let us, he's all, anytime you want to practice, you come into my studio. It's, you're good to go on the fucking house. I'll give you the keys from now on. You can't be in this fucking box. He's all, there's no air in here. You're going to suffocate. I go, well, this is how all the clubs are in Europe, dude. We're just getting, you know, warmed up. So we wound up writing Full Circle in Dawkins' studio. And like, it was all Dawkins gear, a huge room with AC, a big screen TV, leather couches. We're like, what the fuck? And then like a full recording studio in there as well. And ironically, that was the first place we ever recorded a Pennywise demo, like, I don't know, 10 years or 8 years, whatever it was prior, which she wound up buying. So he wound up being a super rad dude. And then we just developed a relationship with him. It was pretty funny because we're these punk rockers from the box, and he's like Ferrari driving metal maniac along with great white guys. And it's a long road down that, down a long rabbit hole down that little compound, but that was pretty fucking cool. So
you got to remember too that, you know, the metal guys, they were in a tailspin around the mid-90s. I mean, they're the bottom dropped out for them. So he just thinks you're the local kids down in the hot box playing. He had no idea.
This is before the fucking bottom dropped out. So we're over there, we're bro down with him. Oh, by the way, like when he was gone one night, I pulled out the 2-inch reels, because I knew about recording a bit, and I put up 2-inch reels breaking the chains live in Japan, and I remixed it and in the middle of the night drunk, and the fucking crowd noise was all fucking pre-recorded, flown in, and you just like, so I remixed it, I took it over to Total Access where we were actually recording About Time. And I showed it to Wynn, who's the owner over there. That's like Total Access, Black Flag, Descendants, Ronnie James Dio, Guns N' Roses, Sublime. Like, it's a really famous studio. And he goes, what is this, Fletcher? And I show, I go, I remixed this off Dawkins 2-inch. And he went fucking bananas, started screaming at me because he's like an audiophile guy. He's all, you realize you could have ruined that tape. You need to bake that tape and you could have destroyed that property. You have no fucking business. I got like totally chewed out. I thought I was all badass because I had like a personal remix of Breaking the Chains. But when Nirvana came along and started scooping it up and they were on the outs, I'll never forget. He goes, I go, what's wrong, dude? And he goes, I'll tell you what's wrong. Fucking Nirvana. Do you know those fucking guys? And I go, yeah, kinda. He's all, fuck them. Those motherfuckers are ruining my life. They're ruining everything I fucking worked for. And I was just thinking, yeah, dude, because people actually wear fucking Levi's and flannels. They don't wear fucking spandex around all day and fucking makeup and jewelry, you know? Yeah. So it was sad because those guys just crumbled, man. And just like any other genre that fails, like it just went away. And it was pretty bad because we would see those guys and Great White and a couple other bands of that nature would always be around there. And they were like, I bought a bunch of shit from Great White, man.
No kidding.
I call it the fire sale. Like, I still have a bunch of their cabinets and shit. But it was a sad time for them, and still a rad dude. But I think he lives with his mom, or if she's still alive, and just kind of goes and plays a couple reunion shows here and there. But you know, all good. He helped us along for the Full Circle era. So.
Right on. Well, before we jump into the track, you know, I love the sound of Land of the Free. I think this record sounds great. It was produced by the band and Joe Barisi. Is that how you pronounce it? Barisi?
Mm-hmm.
And question. So you had a producer named Darian Rundle who produced Straight Ahead. And then Joe came on for Land of the Free. And then Darian came back for From the Ashes in 2003 and The Fuse in 2005. So was this just a stop off? I mean, I love the sound of the record. Were you guys ultimately happy with it?
We had a studio next to Total Access that we wound up leasing from Wynn, and we built it. We used to go in there and record comps and stuff. And we went in there, me and Byron and Justin from 98 Mute and this guy, Mark Theodore from Theologian Records, bought it. And we revamped it. We put a new board in, a Trident ADC, and got a Pro Tools rig and like put a bunch of money into it. And Darian was our in-house guy. So we did that record with Darian there and we mixed it at Total Access. And then it was just kind of like stale, like working with Darian a little bit. We worked with him a lot. He was good. But especially Jim wanted to try somebody else. So we got Barisi, and he was more of a metal guy. He was like Queens of the Stone Age guy.
And
all that stuff. And we wanted a little, you know, a little bit heavier, more bass driven, you know, sound and stuff. So he was pretty blind, like coming in there. He was asking me, like, does the kick drum sound good? Like, what's up? And help me. I've never done punk rock. And it was kind of funny, but he was good. He was definitely, we rubbed, you know, me and him butted heads a lot. And I think basically the band told him, don't listen to Fletcher, like, because I'm always got my nose in where I don't, it doesn't belong when it comes to recording. So I think they said, just disregard everything Fletcher says, do what you want to do. So I helped him a bit in the beginning, getting sounds. And then when it came to recording, man, it was a rough one, but he got good performances. And a lot of people, you know, think it's one of our better sounding albums. I think it's really good. Actually really good, but I wish you look back, I'm like, I wish the guitars had a little more distortion on them or this, that, and the other. The recording experience itself was, for me, was kind of miserable because I owned the studio and he's like, you call this a fucking studio? What the fuck? Like he actually came to our studio and recorded.
Now, was this Stall No. 2 it's called?
Yeah, Stall No. 2.
And okay.
We wound up trying to mix it at Total Access, but he took it away and he wanted to go to an SSL console up in the valley. And I remember one day he wouldn't turn the toms up. And I was like, dude, can you turn the toms up in that part? And he's like, no. And I was like, can you just turn them up for a second and we can listen to it and see if you don't like it, turn it back. Nope.
Oh man. And I was one like, of those. Dude,
I was like, I wrote this song and this tom part's supposed to be prevalent here. And he's all, no, if you don't like it, fire me. And I'm like, that's not how we operate, dude. And he got me so fucking mad. I was out in my car, in my truck, looking at his truck, and I literally almost smashed it to bits. I wound up doing that later on it to someone else because I always wanted to do it, like a demolition derby. But fuck, man, in hindsight I wish I would have done it because it would have been pretty legendary. I was just revving my engine, just sitting there, I'm all, you motherfucker. And I drove around the neighborhood for like an hour to cool down. But he was awesome. Like he's a rad dude, and he's really well known for guitar stuff. He's done a bunch of Bad Religion records now and a bunch of other stuff. But he was a rad dude. It was just like, you know, just sometimes when you're working with people, they have a different way of working. And for me, it wasn't the most pleasant experience. But for like Jim, I think Jim loved him. I love the guy, but I'm just saying, you know, it was a grind. But yeah, I like how it sounds. I think it's a good sounding, punchy record.
I think it's a great representation of what Pennywise sounds like. I think it sounds like you guys. I think the guitars have plenty of fuzz on them for me. I think they sound great. And the low end on this record, that's really, Randy's bass sounds great. And we'll talk about that a little bit. But yeah, Joe, he's credited, to your point, a lot of metal, Slipknot, Clutch, Chevelle, Coheed and Cambria, the Melvins. So an interesting choice for producer, but I think the record sounds great. The song's 3 minutes and 16 seconds, Fletcher. There's an intro of 8 bars. It's bass drum and stereo guitars, all hammering this like staccato part together. On the 7th and 8th bars, the drums go to the floor tom and snare, and then to a full beat with the bass and stereo guitars for another 8 bars before we jump into verse 1. It sounds to me like through the whole track, I want to see if you remember, were all the vocals double tracked?
Probably, you know, that's a thing that I'm not a huge fan of in general, but a lot of bands do it. And Jim got on that kick, I think, with like Mike Ness, like, because he found out, you know, Social D was doing it and other bands as well. But yeah, like, I think the first, like, Unknown Road and the first album were not doubled. About Time may or may not have been doubled all the way through. But like, we, when Jason was in the band before his death, like, he would back up, there was a lot of doubled lines, right? Where Jason would, like, you wouldn't even really consider it a background vocal. It was like Jason would double Jim exactly, punch up these lines, and then the choruses would be, you know, harmonies and different things that would come in on songs. But eventually, when Jason was gone, like, Jim was just like missing something. So he, and Randy's voice was different than Jason's, right? So Jim would just like to double the whole track, and then some of the lines you would kind of turn up a little bit, like the whole track's doubled, and you try to do it perfectly where you wouldn't, you don't know it's a double.
Yeah.
Just like as a thickener, a little underlying thickener. So it works good, but I think I kind of miss like some of those lines where Jason would, you know, just come in and punch it up and it would be almost invisible, like on Unknown Road or something like that. But yeah, it probably is doubled the whole way through.
This would have been all Jim here doing the doubling, not Randy doing any doubles.
Right. Yeah, if Jim did a double on a whole track, it would just be like a whole pass through, and then you go back and do it again and just nail it like really tight. It's literally just like almost like having a delay on a regular vocal.
Right.
Just fattens it up a little bit. And it's a studio trick that a lot of people use, as you know.
Yeah, well, so I know you guys get in the studio and you hash everything out, you each come in with different ideas, but do you recall doing a demo of this song?
Yeah.
You did.
I recall all of it. Where we practice is Justin Thirsk, Jason's little brother's house. And it's actually the house that Jason passed away at. And Justin inherited it. And we've been practicing in that garage, you know, that entire time. And talk about a small space. It's even smaller than the container. But I managed to fit a little recording room off the back of it that's probably 7 feet by maybe 4 feet, not even 4 feet, maybe 3.5. Like, so your back's against the wall and you're wedged into the console. I got the console from the Forum that was the actual PA for the Forum, like, you know, Lakers, home of the Lakers and shit back in the day.
No kidding.
Yeah, I got that at Guitar Center. They traded it in. The church bought the Forum. A church bought it. They traded that for like 3 microphones. The guy's like, get it the fuck out of here. It weighs like 900 pounds. So that's literally what we've been making our demos on for 20 plus years. Actually, the Straight Ahead demo was done on that as well. And that was at Great White's studio when we took over Great White's place for a minute. But long story. So yeah, so Justin played drums. So if I couldn't round up Byron or like I've got weird hours and shit, like I'm going down to that garage. It's 3 blocks from my house. And I'm playing in there. It's all carpeted up and you could fucking play at midnight. The house is right next door. I would drag Justin off his couch. Like he would just be watching football. But hey, dude, I got a song idea. He's all, fuck no. Come on, man. I'm watching fucking Monday Night Football. I'm like, fuck that. You know, like get up. And I would force him to come out. And Fuck Authority was that type of situation where I had this idea. And usually how I write when I'm writing songs is probably like everybody else, is I come up with a guitar riff first. I'm not even thinking about vocals. And then I either don't ever come up with a vocal idea and I just give it to Jim, or I will go record the song and then work on vocals afterwards, or I'll sing along and come up with melody, hum a melody while I'm playing. And literally, I don't remember even necessarily having a vocal melody when I went in that room to start jamming it. But it just came to me. And the Fuck Authority, you know, I was a huge fan of Wasted Youth and TSOL.
Oh, yeah.
So you have a song called Fuck Authority by Wasted Youth, and you have a song called Silent Majority by TSOL, right?
There you go.
So those lyrics were just stuck in my head, and somehow I just worked them into that whole thing, like literally on the spot, basically. Like we started playing, and I was showing him the parts and he's like, okay. And that's like, he's a perfect drum machine because he would just do what I said, you know, like he really wouldn't have a ton of input, but he would like, I go play a tom beat here and do this. So we're just jamming along. And, you know, I'd say about 40 minutes into playing it, like the structure was there, the melody was there. I didn't really have a verse going, but the pre-chorus and the chorus was there and the turnaround. And I remember like as it started taking shape, he was like, fuck. He's all, why can't we write a song like this? Cause he was in 98 Mute. I'm like,
yeah.
I don't know. He's all, fuck, how'd you do that? And I'm like, I don't know. You know, it just came to me. So those songs are in my head. And then as the song progressed and started writing like the real lyrics to it. So that was like the demo. So we actually were able to record it right there on the spot and get the basic nuts and bolts. And then I went in and started writing lyrics around Fuck Authority, Silent Majority, right?
Yeah.
And for me, the lyrics to it were like, I was really pissed off about this Rampart scandal going on in LA, in the LAPD, where these cops had been framing and robbing, murdering, you know, like a whole slew, dealing drugs. There was like, I think it was like 26 cops that were finally indicted.
Yeah, I remember that.
One cop grew a conscience and came forward and ratted on everybody. And it was just like, I don't know. Like, obviously, I'm not a fan of police in general. Like, I just haven't been. I know there's a lot of good cops up there, and I know a lot of cops, and there's a lot of cops that do their job. But I was just on the receiving end of bad shit multiple times growing up in the 80s, being a punk rocker, getting my ass kicked. I mean, I've had cops arrest me, you know, put me on trial, like lying on the witness stand under oath. Like, I've seen it all. You know, I've had broken bones from beatings because I didn't do shit because I was an exploited gig or whatever. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So not a huge fan of police back in those days. And not a huge, like when you hear something about these cops, you know, that our tax dollars are going to pay their salary and they're supposed to protect and serve. And they're actually killing people, framing people. I think like 17 people, or maybe it was like 60 people got released from jail and prison because they were wrongfully convicted by these cops. It was like insane. And it's like, not only is our tax dollars getting spent poorly by paying these guys to do their job that they're not doing, then we're housing these criminals that weren't even criminals and
yeah,
literally killing people. These guys were fucking killing people. So I was all about writing a song about voicing my opinion towards that. And at the same time, like, you know, all Pennywise songs are pretty much about current events or something going on that's making us mad, right? Because we're pretty political at times. And yeah, so that's what shaped the lyrics started going down for me. And then Randy got up there and I'm like, hey, I'm having trouble with a verse. And he, like a verse melody, I had some lyrical ideas. And then me and him brainstormed, he came up with like first verse. And then I was like, do this on the back half. And we came up with a quick verse and all of a sudden it was a song. So usually how I write songs is I'll just give Jim a blank slate sometimes. But if I have a melody idea, I can give him that as well. But a lot of times he doesn't want to hear my melody idea because it gets stuck in his head.
Yeah.
So he's like, hey, I don't want to fuck with your shit at all. Like, let me do my thing. And then if you don't like it, we'll try yours. So in this case, we wrote, you know, verse, pre-chorus, chorus, turnaround, and then we just doubled that. So I would never really get around to writing a second verse, although the topic matter was there. I would usually like make sure Jim liked the song and it was going to grow legs.
Yeah.
In this case, he fucking loved the song. And when that was the case, he would usually jump in for like the second verse on like that or My God or a slew of other ones. He would just be like,
I got to tell you what a great point you just made. No one's ever brought that up on the show. You said that, you know, your idea is always going to be there, but Jim would like the clean slate. That is so, I totally get that. I've had Roger do that with me. He'll have a song and an idea. He's like, no, I want to hear what you come up with. I'm always going to have my melody line, because if Jim were to hear your melody line first, then he wouldn't be able to have anything to go off of except what you came to the table. That's a great point.
Right. It's weird because I don't have a problem with that. Like, I can hear somebody's melody line and I can be like, fuck that, throw that away. And I could write three other melody lines. Like, maybe if it's not a good melody line, then it doesn't click in your head. But for him, he keeps hearing mine. So he gets the blank slate. And obviously, you know, 9 times out of 10, he's writing something better than me. You know,
yeah.
I never really considered myself like a melody writer or a lyricist, but I did write a lot of melodies and lyrics over the, you know, from the first album on. You know, me and Jason were writing a lot of stuff together, and obviously Unknown Road was a very involved melody lyric writing process. Yeah, so for me, if I find it, I'm like, fuck, this is totally worth delivering to Jim with my melody line and I feel really strongly about a song and the words and the content and, you know, the concept of it, I'll give it to him. Like, whether he wants it blank or not, like, I'll be like, here you go, and be too late. Sorry, I don't have it without lyrics.
Yeah.
And my voice sucks. So I usually get Randy or, you know, anybody I can find, or I'll take a stab at it to try to sing for me, and I'll coach them and I'll get it to a good place. And then I'll be like, here you go. So the last album we did, Jim basically took all my lyrics, all my ideas, and threw them in the trash can and goes, hey, I got new ideas for all these songs, like six songs. And I was like, okay. And he fucking just got on the microphone and killed it. And I was like, wow, that is way better than my shit. Thank God.
That's awesome, though, that you can put that, you know, we all have those little ego scuffles in bands. You could put that aside if you're like, you know, Jim's stuff's better, and you sound like you owned it. That's great.
I mean, there's a couple times where I might have liked mine better, but, you know, there's always that problem where it's like, no, I don't want to sing your lyrics. Like, that's a bitch, because he'll write guitar shit that to me is, it's great. But the song's great because of the melody line. Like, the guitar part to me is not that interesting, but like, a lot of guitar parts aren't that interesting. They're just 4/4 in punk rock, right? In general, in music. And I'm like the king of like pickup notes and writing weird, jerky stuff that's not always the easiest to write, you know, melody lines over. So sometimes he'll bring me something and I'll be like, fuck, this is a great song. The guitar's, you know, pretty rudimentary, but I got to play this. And I'll play it because the song's good. But if I imagine me bringing him a song with lyrics that he doesn't want to sing, and like, we don't go around talking about who wrote what, like, obviously it comes out in interviews and shit like that, but for all intents and purposes, it's everybody, you know?
Yeah.
Everybody's got their hands in there at the end of the day, and they're all, I mean, someone writes the bulk of the song, but, you know, if I write the music, Jim writes the lyrics, Byron comes in with some cool drum ideas, Randy's doing bass lines and saying, hey, what about this vocal idea for the bridge? Like, everybody's writing together.
Sure.
It's hard sometimes. And I remember I wrote a song called Something's Wrong With Me. That was literally a song about myself, like being a fucked up individual and why am I, you know, fucked up. And Jim's like, yeah, you're going to finish the lyrics on this one. I'm not doing the second verse. This is all you. And so that happens too. So you got to kind of look, for me, it's easy to look, like put the ego aside and be like, this is a great song. The guitar part's really easy for me to play and I'd like to spice it up. And I try to at times, but it's like, suck it up, play the part, and let the melody line and the song, you know, be what's important, and right, put your guitar ego aside. Because I'm not a good guitar player, but I have my style. So sometimes when you don't get to do your style, and I guarantee Jim goes through that, and if I tell Randy, play this bass line, he's like, fuck you, I'm not playing that bass line. I'm writing my own bass line. I'm like, right, okay, go ahead. But yeah, so it's always a struggle, but that's, for the all intents and purposes, that's how it came together. Like, and I was scared because, like, you just don't know, like, when you really like a song, which has happened before, where it's just like, Jim's like, I'm not singing that song. I'm not into it at all. And it just gets completely shut down. No voting, like, just over it, you know, for whatever reason. And I get that, you know, because you're the singer and you gotta be out there projecting that to an audience. And they're looking at you like, no matter what, you wrote the lyrics, so they're coming out of your mouth. So you're the guy. And if you don't like the lyrical content or what's going on, then you don't want to be that guy. So I get that. But on this one, I remember he walked into the studio. We're over and doing a real demo at Total Access. I think we were probably doing it even with Darian or something, or at stall number two. And he was like, hey, Fuck Authority, great song, man. And I was like, oh, cool. I'm all, yeah, I think that turnaround's a little bit long and we could trim some fat. He's all, no, it's perfect the way it is right now.
That's awesome.
And I was like, fuck. And then he wrote that second verse and it's like, fuck, you know, he gets into the role. And I mean, obviously the song, you know, I wrote it, directed at LAPD, but the song became bigger when he got involved and it became just an anti-authoritarian song because, you know, none of us like being told what to do. And especially if you're being told what to do and it's not something you want to fucking do by someone in a position of power. So it just goes through everything from your parents to your fucking teachers, to your government, to your fucking, you know, lawmakers, to your boss at work. Like, anybody can latch onto that song and be like, fuck you, you know? Freedom, control your life.
Hey, everybody, don't go anywhere. We got lots more with Fletcher after a few words from our sponsors. Hey, Chris, Fletcher from Pennywise is our guest this week. And actually, I went on our sponsor, Rockabilia.com's website to see what Pennywise shirts are on there. And there's actually a really sick black shirt with the big Pennywise logo, like huge Pennywise logo in gray. And it's pretty awesome. I think that I'm going to go on Rockabilia.com and use the discount code DEMAKES to get 15% off and order that shirt myself.
I thought you were hinting, because the holidays are coming up, that you wanted me to go get you that Pennywise shirt.
Yeah, give me a Pennywise shirt for Christmas. Rockabilia.com, man, that's the place to go. Over 500,000. That's 500,000 different items. I mean, every t-shirt you can imagine, sweatshirt. I mean, I saw they had belt buckles, toys, everything you could imagine on rockabilia.com.
That's right, Chris. Everything is officially licensed, and there's more band merch than any other company or website. And Rockabilia features bands across a wide range of genres.
Speaking of a wide range of genres, Chris, and speaking of gifts coming up, I was on there looking. Dude, they have Iron Maiden action figures on there.
What?
They have Iron Maiden, like a lot of them. I saw this one that was Peace of Mind. Is that an Iron Maiden album or song or something?
It certainly is. It was their fourth record.
Well, I saw they had an Asylum Eddie action figure, and they had tons of other action figures of Iron Maiden. So I figured that would be something you'd like on Rockabilia.
That's awesome. Well, head to rockabilia.com and use the promo code DEMAKES to get 15% off, and you too can get your own Iron Maiden shirt.
Or Iron Maiden toy.
Looking to elevate your music career? DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that enables musicians to distribute their music to online stores and streaming platforms such as Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Tidal, and many more. DistroKid collects earnings and payments, sending them to you, the artist. With DistroKid, artists unlock a world of possibilities, from easily paying collaborators with splits to securing your music with DistroLock. DistroKid covers all bases. Plus, you can promote your releases with HyperFollow and create eye-catching visuals with a Spotify Canvas generator, all for free. But that's not all. Introducing the DistroKid app, now available on iOS and Android. Artists can manage their releases, view streaming stats, and withdraw earnings, all from the palm of their hand. And for those looking to perfect their sound, check out Mixia. With its simple interface and customizable mastering options, artists can make their music sound polished and professional within minutes. And don't forget about Instant Share, DistroKid's newest feature. Share large files securely with collaborators, producers, and more, ensuring your music streams at the highest quality. Ready to take your music to the next level? Download the DistroKid app and explore their suite of tools today. Plus, listeners can enjoy 30% off their first year by visiting distrokid.com/VIP/DEMAKES. That's distrokid.com/VIP/DEMAKES.
And now, back to the show.
Sometimes you gotta find another way. You better write your mind and live by what you say. Today is just another day, unless you set your sights and try to find a way. And the drums on the first half of this go to a kick, floor tom, and snare as the bass and stereo guitars are playing these palm-muted eighth notes. On the second half, the drums switch to a kick and snare and hi-hat. And now this first verse is the one you wrote by yourself, correct?
No, that's me and Randy.
That's you and Randy. Right, okay, there. Okay. Yep. And was this kind of on the first initial idea of the demo? Is this what you had come up with after you had figured out it's going to be called Fuck Authority and Silent Majority was going to be part of the chorus lyric?
No. Actually, I had a bunch of ideas for the verse, but I had like the pre-chorus, you know, Fuck Authority, Silent Majority, Raised by the System. I had all that, and then I had Frustration, Domination. So I showed Randy shows up, and I show him that, and I said, here's what the song's about. Here's the vibe. And he's like, okay. And then he started brainstorming that first verse. And he came up with like a repetitive thing. And I was like, hey, and he actually wrote those lyrics right there on the spot. And I was like, hey, change the back half. So it was like, someday you got to find another. And then I gave him the melody for the back half of the first line. And we just sat there. And I don't remember like how much time we put into like writing those lyrics, but it was pretty fast. And all of a sudden it was like, that's really cool. That works. let's record you singing it. So there's literally a demo of Randy singing this entire song, like sitting on a half inch reel in that garage right now.
Oh, wow.
It'll probably wind up in the Punk Rock Museum, as a matter of fact, maybe with that board and all that shit. Side note.
Well, real quick here. So yep. you just said it. You're calling this part, I say fuck authority, silent majority, etc. We'll get into the lyrics in a moment, but you're calling this part the pre-chorus, correct?
Yep.
Okay.
Pre-chorus. Strange, right?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, the title of the song's in there. I'm calling this the chorus, and the frustration and domination part, I'm calling it a post-chorus part.
Right.
But hey, it could be either or. It's a very...
What do you call the part that says, stop trying, after...
I'm lumping that into the post chorus. I'm keeping that all together, but I kind of like what you're saying here because it does break down. We'll call this a pre-chorus.
I say fuck authority, silent majority.
I say fuck authority, silent majority, raised by the system. Now it's time to rise against them. We're sick of your treason, sick of your lies. Fuck no, we won't listen. We're gonna open your eyes. And I gotta tell you, this song to me is like the complete embodiment of what Pennywise is all about, especially that lyric right there. That's kind of what your band is based on to me.
I was getting goosebumps when you're reading that. That's kind of gross.
I gave Fletcher goosebumps.
Yeah, fuck everything, destroy.
No, I mean, that. I don't know, like, you know, you guys have always been, what do you want to call it, anti-authority. And this song, man, it's obviously a fan favorite. And to your point, it can mean so many things to so many people. That's the beauty of lyrics. But, you know, fuck authority could mean, like you said, your parents, your teachers, the police, whoever is in a position of power holding you down.
Yeah, whatever you're mad about or whoever you're mad at, you know, you can just throw this song in your car full blast and... You know, it's like reminiscent of like Killing in the Name of or something, you know, like by Rage Against the Machine. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's written out of frustration and anger. I mean, we all make mistakes and we try to, like, you know, as punk rockers, be more morally responsible for our actions. And, you know, of course, I'm a fuck up and I've done a lot of dumb shit and stuff that would be considered pretty unmoral, I guess, at this point. If you consider biting people and throwing up on people and shit like that, unmoral.
Or, I've seen immoral. It.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not a fucking spokesperson for doing the right thing by any means, but just like anybody else, things make me mad. And like, that was it. And it's just like, yeah, I feel like literally when you read that to me, I felt like I started getting angry and just wanting to like fucking punch something. Cause that's what a lot of our songs do. You know, they make you, they're designed to like make you wake up, make you stand up for yourself, make you feel empowered. Cause there's so many people out there that are in abusive situations and a multitude of reasons, like, or depressed or this or that. And we've always wanted songs that can lift people up and say, hey, you're not alone. Like, you know,
yeah,
you know, we're here for you and we're thinking the same way. And so songs like that are kind of timeless because it doesn't matter what's going on right now. You could find 100 things going on in the world that this song would be appropriate to turn up full blast and get mad, you know.
I'm going to go ahead and call this a pre-chorus because it does break down. We're going to call the next part the chorus, and then the post-chorus is going to be the stop trying part. No, I think you're right.
In your defense, not to interrupt, like, it's really weird for me to like go and play a mute part. Like the lyrical, the fuck authority, silent majority, that's like the hook of the song, and that should be considered the chorus. But the fact that it's like sucked down right there and going into a mute right there is not something we do very often. And I don't really go by a set of rules. Like if you listen to our albums, they're all over the map. Like some albums have pre-choruses, some of them have no pre-choruses, some of them have, you know, completely different outros or completely different bridges, blah blah blah. So this is one of those things that just like somehow when I was jamming it in the room that day, when I had all these parts in my mind that I was putting them together, that just felt right. So I don't know.
I know. I'm glad you said that, because later on when we get to the gang vocal part, it has to be broke down, and it kind of lends itself to this feel that you've already done earlier in the song. I think it's great. In this pre-chorus that we're calling it now, the band breaks down kind of the same feel as the first two lines of the verse. The drums are on the kick, the floor tom and the snare as the bass and stereo guitars are playing those eighth note chugs you were just mentioning for this whole pre-chorus part. Something interesting here, Fletcher. On Sick of Your Lies, again, this is double-tracked vocals throughout this section, but right here, there's a slight harmony on one of the double lead vocals. You get a harmony on the word lies. You know what I'm talking about? Sick of your lies. I don't know if that was an accident that Jim had done, but it's really cool because it's the only spot in the song that you actually get in harmony. And on the last line here, we're going to open your eyes. There's this big Byron drum fill that he's known for that takes us into what we're calling the chorus. Frustration, domination, feel the rage of a new generation. We're living, we're dying, we're never, ever gonna stop. And then, of course, the post-chorus is stop trying that lyric for four times. But what are you trying to say here?
I guess there's always been rebellion, like, obviously, throughout the history of fucking planet Earth. I think it was just kind of like the punk rock generation hasn't been around that long, you know, since, like, the early, you know, mid-70s, whatever.
Yeah.
And you had all these other genres of music that are compliant, basically, right? They're like feel good, fucking rock and roll, this, that, and the other. Reggae, country music was a little bit outlaw, blah, blah, blah. But like punk rock's the first one genre that I think really embraced like fuck the system, fuck the man. You know, we don't like it. We're going to yell and scream. We're going to write fucking 1 minute long songs at full volume. We suck, but we're going to scream until you hear us. So it's kind of like, here we are, we're the new generation, and we're fucking sick of your bullshit, and we're just not going to put up with it anymore, and we're going to keep fighting. And I think we've seen a lot more in recent years, since the song even, and even before the song, of people standing up for themselves and what they believe in and getting more vocal. So it's just about basically like any group of humans that you know, is fed up and is just going to come at you full speed. And I think punk rock has tackled a lot of subjects and has been on the forefront of just saying, hey, fuck you. Like, we're calling you out. We're going to tell it like it is. If you don't want to hear it, fine. But we're not going to write love songs, and we're not going to write fucking, you know, surf songs. We're going to write songs that matter to us, and we're going to try to bring about change in the world for better, you know? And
yeah.
It's kind of just like, yeah, we're fucking fed up and we're coming for you. And that's the basic meaning of that course, if you would. You know?
Well, I love that you can really hear the unison vocals in this part. I think it needs it. I think it doesn't sound like a gang vocal, but you can hear it. It sounds mean. It sounds tough. The bass, drums, and stereo guitars are in. I wrote again, this part just pummeling. These big open buzzsaw guitar chords on We're Never Gonna Stop. On Stop, the band stops completely. And then on Stop Trying, the whole feel kind of changes for these back four lines. And at the last line of Stop Trying, there's a big tom buildup to a complete stop. And then this big pick slide takes us into verse number two. You know, the time is right to take control. We got to take offense against the status quo. No way. Not going to stand for it today. Fight for your rights. It's time we had our say.
There you go.
Was this the lyric that Randy came in and wrote, or Jim?
Jim.
Jim did this one. Okay.
So I think that pretty much sums up like what we've been talking about. Once again, it's basically just saying, hey, we're here and we're just letting our fans and any listeners know, like, hey, man, it's time for you to take action. And it's a great fucking verse. You know, he's always so good at like picking up on like what you're writing, if I'm writing or Andy's writing, and going, hey, I got some ideas now too. And that's his job. Like, he's the lyricist, he's the melody maker, right? So having him come in and put the icing on the cake of songs is always awesome to watch and be like, hey, this line right here, not so much, Al. Like, check this line out. And you're like, oh, fuck yeah, that's how it's supposed to go.
Yeah.
But it's just a call to arms, right? It's like the normal, like what we've been fed is no longer acceptable, and we're not going to keep eating your pablum. Or whatever that is. Is that pablum? Is that a good use of that word?
I think so.
Like baby food? Is that like baby food or some shit? We're not gonna keep eating your bullshit. Like we're done. And he summed it up perfectly right there. And there you have it. Verse number two.
I gotta say, you know, I already mentioned I love the production on this record. I think the low end's great. I think the guitars, the vocals. I gotta give a nod to Joe Barisi right now. You know, Fletcher, again, I think this sounds like Pennywise. There's not a like crazy overdub guitar noodling things. It sounds like he kind of let you guys be you. Is that correct?
Yeah. He didn't have a lot of direction on like song structure and stuff like that. One of the things he taught us, which is really cool, is to double ending lines. So if you're on a chorus or a verse where you just typically have like four bars of something,
mm-hmm.
take the fourth bar and double that and maybe tweak the lyric a little bit. So you're like five.
Yeah.
And you'll hear that on some of these songs, not on this song particularly, but that was pretty cool. But he was just kind of like, he's the known for getting the sounds guy, and he's the guitar sound guy. So we did a bunch of shootouts with different amps and stuff. And I remember I had a Crate Blue Voodoo. And he's like, the fuck, you're playing a Crate Blue Voodoo on this record? You're not playing a Crate. I'm like, okay, well, let's at least listen to it. And it was like a $3,000 head. It was like actually like a really, really nice head that they built, like a high-end one.
Yeah.
But no one wanted to pay $3,000 for a fucking Crate amp. And we did the shootout, and he was pretty fucking blown away by how good it sounded at the end. But yeah, he was the sound guy, and he was really good at getting Jim to sing, you know, and coaching Jim. And I remember like the intro of this song.
Yeah.
It's really weird. I do this string, I down pick, but then I do a weird upstroke in it. And you can get turned around when you're doing that. It's like, if you tried to play it, you'd know what I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
And
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Right. So it's a weird little thing. And I was getting turned around on it when I was doing it, like on the double or something. I was like, what the fuck's wrong with you? He's like, can't you hear that? I'm like, dude, I don't even know what I'm doing. Like,
yeah.
I just wrote this part, and I don't ever like look at the technique. I just write it. And it was kind of a weird, people said that Foo Fighters stole that lick for all
My Life.
All My Life.
Yeah. When I feel the most, feel it come to life when I see your ghost.
They fucking ripped you off. They ripped you off. I'm like, no, they didn't. It's not even close, but it's similar, like similar type of intro. But yeah, he was super pissed off. And then him yelling at me put me under a bunch of pressure to even mess it up more and more and more times. And eventually I got it right. But he was good at getting performances out of people, let's say.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about some of that palm muting when we get to the instrumental bridge here in a bit. There's some really cool stuff you do in there on guitar. But the pre-chorus here, the band dynamics are the same as pre-chorus one. It's the same lyrics here. You get that harmony again on Lies and the line, sick of your lies. The last line here, we're going to open your eyes. Man, there's a killer bass guitar run that Randy does. And I gotta say, Fletcher, I don't think Randy gets enough credit in the punk rock circles of how good he is, man.
He's so good.
He is such a great bass player. If you're listening, Randy, hello. I love you, man. He is awesome. I love the tone there of the bass. It just really stands out. It's great. We go into chorus number two. Frustration, domination, generation of a new generation. We're leaving. is interesting chorus. You know, typically, you know, if you're going to change up a chorus, it's going to be the last time in the song. Nope, it's chorus number two here. We get a back half lyric change. It's completely...
doubles up.
Yeah, it's completely different. So we get a double chorus here. I'm going to read all these lyrics out. Frustration, domination, feel the rage of a new generation. We're living, we're dying. And here's where it changes. We're sick and tired of relentless lying. Destroy, enjoy. Your fucking world is our new toy. Dominate, eliminate. You're going to feel the wrath, wrath of hate. And on wrath, the band stops. Wrath of hate, that lyric happens. And then we get an instrumental bridge for 16 bars. Really aggressive guitar here, and this is what I was speaking of a moment ago, Fletcher. There's these harmonics that are happening between the palm muting there that are really cool.
Yeah, and then get harmonics right in there. Yeah, and it's weird because we never do bridge parts without lyrics, right? It's always got, I mean, I can't remember a bridge part other than like a guitar solo, but like there's not like a rhythmic bridge part that doesn't have lyrics at some point.
I wrote that in my notes. This is odd for you guys. What was the deal here? Was there no lyrics, or just it sounded good how it was? Because this is different for you not to have lyrics during a bridge.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like when I wrote it, I had this bridge, and the ball got in Jim's court eventually with that double course there. I don't know. Maybe it was like, hey, let's take a breather right here. And he didn't write anything for it. I think we attempted to write stuff there, but then the fact that it like breathed for a minute and it was pretty powerful. Like I love playing that part on stage. Like I get so fucking amped to rock that part with no, it's almost like a guitar solo in a weird way without being a solo with like only three chords, but it's really fun to just play that with nothing because it's so rare probably for us to even do it.
I'm glad you said that because this is, to me, a breath of fresh air. There's no vocals pummeling you because the next section, it seems like it pops so much more
right when
we go into the pre-chorus, and we'll get there in a second. At the very end of this instrumental bridge solo part, at the end of the 16 bars, the band stops completely, and there's just four subtle hits of the hi-hat, not even hits with a stick. It's just Byron hitting the hi-hat.
A little foot tap
that takes us into pre-chorus number three, which again, whether we're calling this a pre-chorus or a chorus, Fletcher, I kind of feel like you get two choruses in this song.
Yeah, that's kind of like actually a good way to describe it, because obviously if you ask somebody what's the chorus for Fuck Authority, they're going to say it's the Fuck Authority part, right?
Yeah.
And I'm just saying, like, from layman's terms of like working on a song, it's like, here's the verse, here's the pre-chorus, suck down, the chorus explodes with the, you know, frustration, then you got to turn around after that with the stop trying, and then so it's you're kind of right, it's a double whatever. Yeah. However you want to describe it.
Well, coming out of that bridge, I think this part hits harder because there's no vocals there. And when it gets into this, what we're calling pre-chorus three, the drums are just present with the bass. It's kick, floor tom, and snare with the bass guitar until the lyric, we're sick of your treason. When that comes in, the stereo guitars come back in. But for the first four lines here, it's just drums and bass. Huge gang vocal.
Fuck authority. Silent majority, raised by the system. Now it's time to rise against them. We're sick of the treason, sick of your lies. Fuck, no, we won't listen. We're gonna open your eyes.
You know, This vocal kind of reminded me. I felt like I transported to your studio in my head, Fletcher. And correct me if I'm wrong. It's almost like you invited all your friends back from the bar one night to sing this part.
Actually, it was almost like that. We did a contest to bring people to sing that part. Like
what?
Yeah, we did a contest where got on, you know, went out there and said, hey, you know, put your name in the hat if you'd like to come to California and sing this song. I don't think we told them what song it was, just come sing on a Pennywise record. And we had, I don't know how many submissions, you know, thousands and thousands of people. It was like, hey, you got to get your own way here. You know, you got to pay for your own accommodations because we weren't trying to like fly 20 people out here. And I think it was like 15 or 20 people. And yeah, they came, dude. They came from all Canada, Florida, everywhere.
Oh, that is super cool.
There was a kid named James who, and the way that we picked him was like, I literally randomly went through and read people's emails and just said, okay, this guy should be here. You know what I mean? It wasn't like drawing numbers. It was like, I read every single submission, which took a long time. And some people would have like nothing. Some people would, you know, say something more relative that, you know, put them to the forefront. But there's this kid, James, from Canada. And I called, and his mom, and I called everybody individually and was like, hey, you won the contest. And they're like, oh shit. Or you're invited. So this kid was 16. I got on the phone with his mom and she's like, oh my God. Well, we're in Edmonton or whatever, or Toronto, I think it was. And so his brother had recently committed suicide and he found him like a couple weeks before. And the mom was like, he's going through a really hard time and, you know, he loves your band and we can't afford to send him. And I'm like, okay, check it out. I'll pay for his plane ticket and he can stay at my house.
Oh, man.
And I mean, what parent would fucking bring their like a child under my fucking wing for, you know, a week living at my house? A 16-year-old kid, man. His mom put him on the plane and his mom and dad put him on the plane and I picked him up from the airport and he stayed with me for, I don't know, 4 or 5 days. And he sang on Fuck Authority along with all these other people. And yeah, it was pretty cool.
That is so rad. You don't know how many times I went to bat for you, Fletcher. You're a big softie, and I always knew it.
he got to witness some interesting shit. Trust me, and we've been friends ever since. Like obviously, he's an adult. It's 20 years later, but
that is awesome.
Yeah, so we had a big barbecue, and they all came and sang, and I think they sang on a couple other songs as well. We used them for some group parts and stuff, and I can't remember what songs I'd have to listen to the album, but
I have never heard of a band doing that. That is so awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. But now every one of them is always like, hey, you're coming through town. Can I get on the guest list? Like for the last 20 years, yeah. somebody wants to guest the spot because they sang, but yeah, they get it. But that was the group that was not everyone from the bar. It was everyone from the world.
Well, again, talk about a part hitting hard after we get out of this pre-chorus that breaks down here, man. When this chorus hits, it's just like all the lights come on. It's the same lyric. It goes back to frustration, domination, feel the rage of a new generation. We're living, we're dying, we're never, ever going to stop. On stop, the band stops. And then you get stop trying for 4 more times. And the band ends here. I wrote the word dot 9 times. It's dot, 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 dot.
yep.
And that's bass drum, stereo guitars, and classic Pennywise ending. The song comes to an end, and obviously you guys will always be known for Brohim, but I think this song's second line to what Pennywise is all about, man.
I would say that those two have the craziest crowd reaction. Society is another one that's up on that list, but like I say about Brohim, not to switch gears, but like everybody that's in that room that's heard Brohim and has lost a friend or a loved one, you know, whether it's their mom, their dad, their best friend, their fucking dog, you know, like they have an emotional connection. That song's been played at so many funerals and has so many stories. I've heard thousands, like probably tens of thousands by now, of stories about like that was played at my friend's funeral. Here's what happened. He died in a motorcycle accident, or this happened, or that happened. They're like, I got the lyrics tattooed on me, or this. And so I always try to think about Broham as like, it's not our song anymore, it's our fans' song. And so when you imagine being in a room with 5,000 people that know Broham and like Broham, or 10,000 people, or, you know, 50,000, whatever, like, let's say 10,000 at a Pennywise big show in LA, like everyone in that fucking room, that song means something different to them, individual, or like their group of friends. So when they sing it, the emotional level there is so fucking high because they're invested in the song so hardcore that it becomes a brotherhood song, because the guy next to you that you've never met in your life is singing it his guts out for his brother that died, and you're singing it for your best friend. And it becomes this fucking unstoppable energy that, like, it just translates to like what we're doing up there. Obviously, we know we feed off the crowd, but that song will fuck me up night after night after night and just make me like, because I go through it, you know, with my brother dying and Jason dying,
yeah,
and a lot of my friends are gone. It different nights mean different things. Depends on who's there in the building with me and who brought up what, or, you know, maybe a recent friend passed away and we're singing it. You know, it happens all the time. We're always losing people. So it just becomes this huge emotional outburst and outpouring. So it's like, fuck authority is along the same lines. Like, it's not as emotional. It's not like that sentimental. But it is like, if you're having a bad day or a bad month, or you remember something traumatic that happened to you by, you know, like a fucking Catholic priest or some shit, like, you got pent up aggression and anger that needs to be fucking relieved. So when you play Fuck Authority, the same thing happens. Everyone's got something in their life that they're not happy about, and somebody telling them what to fucking do that they want to just fucking, you know, beat to death. So it's like, hey, get it out of your system right now amongst your friends, where you can go knock yourself around in the pit, fucking rush the stage. You know, a lot of people, that's when they decide, like, fuck the security, I'm coming. You know, I'm singing a couple notes and doing a stage dive. And it's the same type of energy, man. So it's definitely one of those songs where when you hit it, you'll see who's mad that night. You know, the people that are pissed and have a bone to pick or something to get off their chest, they're going hard. So it's having two songs like that in our set list is like, wow. And lately we've been playing, like, you know, Stand By Me, Fuck Authority, Broham, and it's just like deadly. Or Fuck Authority, Stand By Me, Broham, and it's like a deadly combo of just like, fuck, man, the fucking building's about to explode. So it's pretty, we're pretty fortunate to have stumbled across those types of songs, you know?
Heck yeah. Well, listen, man, bottom of my heart, I want to thank you for sitting in today. And before we break, what do you want to leave the listeners with? What's happening with Pennywise? What you guys got coming up?
Well, we just got back from Australia, which was awesome. We've been doing a bunch of touring. We're out with Rise Against, which was awesome. Those guys are always fucking super fun. And doing a bunch of like one-off festival weekend type deals, but got a little break. We're playing a Glamis out in the desert, like big off-road deal, you know, for Polaris.
Cool. Yeah.
Polaris is throwing a party, which I don't know if they know what they're getting into, but it's crazy out there. And I've never been, because I don't do well with alcohol and motorized vehicles. I figured I'd kill myself. So it might be my last weekend on the 29th, but that's like an unannounced show that's probably announced now. But yeah, it's going to be mayhem. And then we got another little thing for Monster, a little backyard party with a bunch of athletes that are going to be there. And then a holiday break. And then we're heading over to Europe with Dropkick Murphys for like a 5-week tour, which is fucking unheard of for us. 5 weeks.
That's going to be mayhem.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty cool. Jim's kids are all in college. He's like, I'm an empty nester. Let's go. I'll bring my wife. So yeah, we're looking forward to that. It's been a while. Byron's freaking out. He's biting his nails off. A month, you know, 5 weeks on a bus with me, that's hell. That's hell's torture. So, you know how it goes.
It's a sentence.
Yeah, it is. It's basically like a life sentence right there, or a death sentence, or some kind of sentence, but it's not fun. But I'll behave myself. But that's what we got coming up. And then, you know, the usual stuff, maybe some European festivals and Canada, a couple festivals up in Canada, and blah, blah, blah.
Right on, man. Well, again, thank you so much, man. It was absolute pleasure.
Thank you. I like how you do your homework. you really get in there deep. Good stuff. God,
Hey, we got to take a quick break for a word from our sponsors, but don't go anywhere. We got lots more Chris DeMakes a podcast after the break.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If you like music and you like podcasts and you like to laugh and you like to learn, you need to immediately subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Each week on the One Hit Thunder podcast, we dive deep into the story and back catalog of a one-hit wonder band or artist. From there, we have a good, healthy discussion as to whether they brought the one-hit thunder or were nothing more than a one-hit wonder. We have a huge back catalog, and we've done episodes on everything from Don't Worry, Be Happy and the Macarena to King of Wishful Thinking and Cumbersome. I promise you're going to love the show more than Jaquan loved getting tipsy, and even more than Bobby Boris Pickett loved making alternate versions of the Monster Mash. Subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your podcasts.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Chris DeMakes a Podcast, all you have to do is email your best song via MP3 only and a short bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured artist is God's Green Apples, a four-piece punk rock band rooted in Americana from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You can find their music on all the streaming services. Here's a snippet of their song, Anymore.
Ain't a thing about you now and then. Every sleepless night she's dancing in my head and she's singing, hey.
The Wrap with Chris and Chris.
So, Chris, I didn't know what we were getting into today. I've heard plenty of Fletcher stories from you in the past, so I didn't know if this was going to be a crazy podcast or not, but I thought it was great.
Well, you know, if this podcast wasn't songwriting-centric, I could have talked to Fletcher for 6 hours about his antics alone, of course. But, yeah, he was. We caught Fletcher on a good day. He was great.
Hey, I know you were psyched to talk about Dokken in this episode a little bit.
I remember Jim, when we had him on from Pennywise, mentioning something about Dokken, but yeah, that's an interesting parallel here that just, you know, two worlds colliding.
I think I saw a little bit of the stories that I've heard about Fletcher in the past when he told the story about himself going out in his truck and thinking about smashing into the producer's truck because he was so mad, which, you know, I think that was the Chris DeMakes a Podcast first.
Well, again, how long do we want this wrap up to be here? I could talk for literally hours about Fletcher's antics, but yeah, his brain goes to some interesting places. I'll just leave it at that.
I've noticed in episodes a lot that you're bringing up vocal doubling a lot. A lot of the songs we've been talking about lately have doubled vocals. I think, like Fletcher said, if you do it tastefully, it just kind of thickens up the vocal, and people a lot of times might not even notice that it's a doubled vocal. But you do, with your very particular ear, you're picking that out.
Yeah, you know, it was a trick for years with a lot of people that had thinner voices. You know, I know that the singer from Rat, he would be like a triple and quadruple tracked. Now, it doesn't mean all the vocal is going to be the same level, but you'd get your one real main vocal take, but you would fill it out with some other vocal tracks. And if used sparingly and wisely, it can really thicken up and make a vocal feel great. I don't particularly like to hear it. You know, when I do hear it, like on what we're calling the chorus part in Fuck Authority, I love it. I think it's just, it sounds mean. It really fills everything out. And again, when used the right way, it's awesome.
I was happy to hear that Pennywise also practiced in a storage space. As a guy who's practiced in a storage space for pretty much the majority of the past couple decades. I thought that was cool. Do you practice in a storage space?
We did for years. Matter of fact, when we had our A&R guy initially from Capitol years ago, him and the scout from Capitol Records came down middle of the summer. Mosquitoes, no air conditioning. This place was an absolute hellhole. So yeah, I did my time. I did my time in a storage space. Practice space.
I'm still doing my time in a storage space. Well, with Punchline anyway. It's funny, in my other bands we practice like people's houses, but no, Punchline, we still do it old school in the storage space. I thought one thing, this is kind of out of left field, but Fletcher brought up pablum, and I was like, as soon as he said it, I'm like, what did he just say? And then he said something about being like baby formula or whatever. I had never heard of that before. Had you? Do you know what it is?
I believe it's spelled P-A-B-L-U-M. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, I've seen the word, and he said, is that the right use of the word? I'm like, kind of. I don't really know what pablum means.
It's a processed cereal for infants that was originally marketed and co-created by the Mead Johnson Company in 1931. It's used to combat infant malnutrition.
Well, Fletcher's not that old. How the hell would he know from a baby food from 1931? Pablum. Okay. I thought pablum was like, I don't know, some adjective or something.
I mean, maybe it was a West Coast thing. I think of, what's that baby formula stuff called? Like Pedialyte.
Yeah.
I think of Pedialyte. If he would have said that, I don't know what he meant. Anyway, just a little bit of trivia for anyone who also wondered, what did he just say? I also thought it was cool that Fletcher talked about having a high-end crate amp that sounded good. Now, for anyone that hasn't played in a band, it feels like everyone who starts a band, everyone has crate amps when they first start, like when you're a teenager. And I always thought, I'm not talking shit on crate. Apparently they have a high-end model that costs like thousands of dollars that Fletcher has. It sounds great. But it always felt like a Nash skateboard or something. Like it was like, oh, you just get, that's your first amp you get. But hey, I guess they make good stuff too.
Yeah, it's like the house brand at Sears, you know? It's like, it's just the generic thing. Roger has like 4 or 5 crate heads, I think. I think he collects them at this point. But yeah, it's a lower end. It is actually a brand of amp called Crate, C-R-A-T-E. And I was unaware there was a high-end model, to be honest. Fletcher enlightened me with that one.
And Chris, it was such a cool story that Fletcher told about bringing the kid out to California from Canada who had lost his brother. Man, really warms your heart to hear that. You know, it's like you said, maybe he's a big softy.
Yeah, you know, he's a rough exterior, a hard shell, but yeah, he's got a big heart. He's done some great things for the punk rock community. And, you know, I had mentioned that that part just kind of feels loose in the song. It feels like they invited their buddies back, you know, after a night of drinking out of the bar or a party or something. He's like, well, kind of. And when he explained that story, I thought that was really cool.
That's really, really awesome. I mean, what makes for great group vocals, gang vocals, is to have a bunch of different voices in there. And what kind of makes them extra cool and fun is if those people singing that aren't necessarily all great singers.
Yeah.
Getting some normal people in there singing, it just adds to the realness of it.
Absolutely. We've done gang vocals for Less Than Jake, where we've like, you know, called in the girlfriends or the wives or the next door neighbor, and they're like, I can't sing. It's like, yeah, but we're chanting this part. You don't need to sing. Just do your best. And it kind of, you know, makes everything a little off and not perfect, which adds to the realness.
Yeah. And speaking of realness, if you enjoy the realness that Chris and I bring to each week with Chris That Makes a Podcast, you might also enjoy the After Party Podcast. It's our bonus episode each week that you can get if you sign up for our supporting cast at chrisdemakes.com.
Chris, I don't know how you do it week after week after week. The segues just keep a-coming. That's right. Go over to chrisdemakes.com and sign up for a supporting cast. You'll be helping to support the podcast that you know and hopefully love right here. Chris That Makes a Podcast. We love your support. And please join our Facebook group, the Chris That Makes a Podcast Facebook group, over 4,000 members. It's super interactive, a lot of fun. Give me a follow on Instagram if you don't mind at Less Than Christy. And I'm still doing those custom songs and jingles. Hit me up if you'd like when the holidays are upon us. You can hit me up at chrisdemakes@gmail.com. Again, that's chrisdemakes@gmail.com. And I want to thank this week's guest, Fletcher Draghi, for sitting in with us. And we'll see you next week.
Do you enjoy the content and production of Chris That Makes a Podcast? Do you have an idea for a podcast or an existing podcast that you'd like to take to the next level? Well, check out weknowpodcasting.com. At weknowpodcasting.com, we have over 25 years of combined experience in the pod field, and we're ready to help you succeed in the golden era of podcasting.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is the story of Whitney Houston.
This is the story of Kurt Cobain.
Of George Michael, of Otis Redding, of Amy Winehouse, of Michael Hutchence, Bob Marley. This is the story of Prince.
It's a new podcast series
about how they died, why they died, and why we're still talking about them so long after.
It's like nothing you've ever heard before.
It's storytelling.
But it's more than that, because rock stars,
they tell us how we feel. They change our mood.
They change the clothes we wear, the people we hang out with,
the way we remember things.
It's them who give us those ludicrous moments, the ones where you're
jumping around, singing your heart out, feeling understood.
And it's those moments we'll help you remember, the ones you're thinking about right now.
That feeling.
That feeling.
It's coming soon from Crowd Network.
Just search for Death of a Rockstar on your podcast app
and subscribe now.